So, hello. I just did some push-ups. I'm a little out of breath. I thought I should walk my talk. The idea of the Tree of Life is to offer a holistic model for our well-being, and I do appreciate the model so much because it offers us a check, so to say, a checklist. When we notice that our well-being is not there, we can go through the roots. Have I taken care of my spiritual life? Then we can see, is there something I need to do for my physical well-being? Is there something I need to do for my emotional well-being? Is there something I need to do for my well-being and my relationships? And it's very simple. You just have a little checklist with the Tree of Life, which is not just intellectual, but which is something which, like a tree, is alive. It's organic. It's not dead. You can immediately relate to it and feel how it goes. I would like to now, after leaving the roots, or I would like to leave the roots behind and go to the trunk. The psychophysical well-being of us human beings is also very important. I noticed that one or two of you were really being newly introduced to the idea of taking care of oneself spiritually. I want to encourage you, those of you for whom this was new, who found it maybe not so easy to enter into deeper states of meditation than those who are accustomed to it. I want to encourage you, this is natural. A journey starts with the first step out of the house. In other words, when we want to go into an area of our life which has been not so well taken care of or not so regularly taken care of, it's almost like stepping into a new area. And the first thing is what we feel, unfamiliarity with it. But that's good. That's good. As long as we feel something, it means we are alive. Good. About physical and emotional well-being. Why are they grouped together and seen as one thing, the trunk? The reason is that they are very much interrelated. There are many important studies which found out that people, for instance, who are hopeful, who are enthusiastic, heal very in a significantly faster rate than people who are depressive and emotionally not very well. There are treatments for emotionally disturbed people which take care of the body first. For instance, in hospitals in India, it is well known that emotionally disturbed people can become very easily cured by just pouring a little oil in a steady stream. It's a steady stream of oil which is put on the forehead. It's called Shirodhara. I myself was in a hospital. My concern was not, I was emotionally, that I was not taking care of this. I needed massages for circulation and so on. But there was a person who was really emotionally disturbed, and he was treated like this, and he became well and has stayed well. I have been in contact with the doctor, Dr. Raju, and here the reports. The emotions are so much related to with the body that the body offers an easy access to them. For instance, when your Hippocrates says, when you are disturbed, take a long walk. Hippocrates is founder of medicine, the Greek person. Every doctor nowadays, or still, takes an oath, the Hippocrates oath, before he starts his practice. He also knew this, and he had a center of healing in Greek, where it was like a huge hospital, we would say, but there was a half of it was parks for walking, then there was music, for listening to music, because he could understand how much the body and the mind are connected. Therefore, many times restlessness and a lack of concentration, which is a problem for many children, can be overcome by just offering the children and the grown-ups exercises. According to Ayurveda, physical health rests on three items. I will briefly talk about them, and then I will go, like our Anthony has announced, I will go into emotional well-being. I have limited time, and if I would give you a whole plan how to take care of your body nicely, I would speak for months on this. Everyone would forget it the moment they leave. But if you understand the principles, you can work with these principles in your own life. The first principle of physical health is, believe it or not, according to Ayurveda, appropriate diet. What is good for me may not be good for you, because we have a different physical makeup. So an appropriate physical diet is important. As far as I have studied this subject, there are a few things which are definitely proven to be cross body, I mean over the different types of body available. This is a vegetarian diet. But believe it or not, the Ayurveda says, for people who are maybe not spiritually oriented and who have that type of body, they can take a minimum little amount of meat. As a spiritually minded person, this comes over my lips with great hesitation, because spiritually, that is not acceptable to exert violence towards sensitive or highly sensitive beings. I just want to say, you must find your appropriate diet. That is, what is for your type of body recommendable. There is a lot that takes care of a lot of your health, because all the tissues, all the organs, everything is built up by the food which you take in. Therefore, a healthy diet and a conscious eating while you eat is very important. With this, you can take care of many, many problems in your health. The second principle for a healthy life is a healthy lifestyle. You know, in the lifestyle, there are many aspects, but one which I would like to mention and which is foundational is regular exercise. In our civilization, we don't move enough, and that is a huge problem, because we are not rocks, we are moving bodies. We have muscles for this, and we are equipped like this. And if we don't use our body for frequent movement, it will atrophy. It's almost like we don't use a violin for playing music, but we try to hammer nails into the wall with a violin, then the violin will suffer and our result will not be very satisfactory. The nails won't go very deep. So the body is a moving body, and you need to do a few things with it. You need to move it. You need to have a regular supply of water, because it's 70%, 70 to 80% water. These two things are very, very, very important. And the third aspect of good health is, believe it or not, restful sleep. This is another thing which gets neglected in our times. Restful sleep. So much power is left in the body to heal itself, but it needs the time, and that happens during the sleeping hours. And every hour which you go to bed before midnight is double or thrice as valuable as every hour you sleep after midnight. That is something I just want to put into the room. I have in my life school a lot of proofs and studies and so on, but here, due to lack of time, I want to just say kindly, believe me, I'm not just saying it without any foundation. Sleep before midnight is very important. And I know with your lifestyle, this is almost a cry for the impossible. I know. You are children of modern society. No. I myself need to preach to myself, because as a lecturer, I start my programs at 7 or 8 o'clock. Then I go for it. Then many people come and want to talk to me. Then I have to drive to the next place, to the place where I sleep. Then I don't feel like going to bed. I want to read something, or until I faint from tiredness, and then I'm ready to go to bed. Yeah, but that lifestyle takes a toll on your health. According to Ayurveda, the ancient system of medicine, it means the science of life. According to this ancient medic system, there's a tripod of health, which, like a photo camera or a film camera, carries its camera. This tripod of health carries your health. And if one leg is damaged, yeah, it becomes difficult. So these three items are diet, proper diet, proper lifestyle, and I've spoken about exercise and water intake, and finally sleep is very, very important. Have you ever been in a problematic situation in your life, and you took a good rest, and then you woke up and you thought, well, it's not so bad. I am an international lecturer, that's one part of my work, but the other is I'm counseling really many, many people. And many times I have the following situation. A person is all upset and comes to me during a retreat, and I immediately can see what would help. So, but I don't dare to say it. Then I listen after, you know, so that they know I give it a good listening for 50 minutes and so on. And then I say, my suggestion is you take now a healthy sleep for 4 hours. And after 4 hours, you come back again. And then I will talk more to you. 75% of the problems have been solved like this. Really? Now you might say, well, you have easy people who come to you. That may be, but I'm just saying healthy sleep is very important, very important. What if you can't get asleep, can't fall asleep? One thing is you need oxygen in your sleeping room, a pleasant smell you need, maybe an aromatic oil which calms you. If you are very worked up, what always helps is to do push-ups until you faint. Not really faint, I'm just saying, until you're tired. There are different techniques which we teach in the Vedic way, how you can fall asleep in 2 minutes, and those who have serious difficulties, I can give you one afterwards in private. These three things are good for health. But I want to now go to the emotional side of it. Emotional well-being. Made a few notes here. Man's life is governed by his emotions. There is a little story which the psychologist Paul Watzlawick tells. It's about a man who has a puncture while he drives on a country road. So he comes. He understands I have a flat tire. He stops the car. He looks and he notes I have a spare tire, but I need to find a jack to lift my car and then change the tire. So he looks if somewhere in his car is a jack, and he thought of everything before he started the journey, but not of a jack. So he looks around, there's one country house, and he decides, I will ask the person in the house to lend me their jack. So he goes. The person in the house has already noticed that there is a car, there's a flat tire, so most probably he needs a jack. He sees the person from the car, the driver, approaching the house, and he says, I'm so happy in this boring country life. Something is happening, and of course I will give him a jack. I have a perfect hydraulic jack, the newest model. It's my great pleasure. I will maybe bond with this person. Maybe on my next visit to the town I can visit him. And he already makes the jack ready. Now this person, the driver, approaches the house and he develops a serious doubt. These are people from the country. They are most probably from Wales. Veils people are either magicians or fools. I hope I speak in culturally acceptable language. They will never give me the jack. People are not like this. They are not friendly. So the other person in the house is, he comes closer. He looks a little distressed. If he would only know that I have a jack. And now this driver comes closer and closer, while his mind tells him that he will never get that jack. Finally, he rings at the door. Our enthusiastic person opens the door, and the driver yells at him, "Keep your foolish jack for yourself!" And turns away and goes back to the car. This is a story how the mind and certain emotions ruled this driver and gave him a hellish mentality. My dear people, we are all ruled by our minds and our emotions. The ancient scripture, Bhagavad Gita, tells us, "For him who has conquered the mind is the best of friends. But for one who has failed to do so, his mind will remain the greatest enemy." Please let us reflect a little bit about it. Our mental state will determine the quality of our life. Therefore, we need to take care of mental and emotional hygiene. It's even more important than the physical hygiene. We know when we don't wash ourselves regularly, we will first develop a certain fragrance which will not make us very acceptable in society. I say it poetically. But also illnesses can come, first of the skin and then other illnesses. Much more important than physical hygiene is mental and emotional hygiene, because it influences our life even more than our physical hygiene. When we are not able to control our minds, we will come under the influence of mood swings, something which is very, very common in people's life nowadays. When you don't take control of your mind, someone else will take control of your mind. The habits which you have adopted and which do not always serve you very well. To break an old habit which is harmful is only possible for us when we know that it is possible to take ownership over our thoughts and our mind. It's another very important thing. Mood swings and harmful habits can only be overcome when you take control of the mind. Another thing is, according to Vedic psychology, our mind is surrounded by six types of unfriendly beings. Lust, anger, greed, illusion, especially enviousness, in Vedic times you would call that madness, obsessive thinking. These are six enemies which control the mind if you don't tell the mind what to think, and the emotion, if you don't have an access to your emotions. they are always lurking there, and then there are a few trigger points, then all of a sudden you become angry and blow up, or someone does better than you in some area, and your old enemy envy comes and influences your mind. These are mental enemies, you know, these enemies of the emotion can take control over you if you don't learn to access and elevate your mind and emotions. The good news is that all of us have one faculty in our inner life which can very easily control the mind, or let us say monitor the mind and the emotions, and that's the buddhi. Western psychology will always will say it's the intelligence, but without having the time to get into it, intelligence is part of the buddhi. Buddhi is that ability which we have trained a little in the meditation, where we take on the observer position and just watch our feelings. Watch, oh my God, here I'm envious. It will not help me, it will not help the other person. Okay, here I'm overcome with intolerance and anger. It's like drinking a cup of poison, which will poison my mind if I allow it to go on. And our buddhi can see it. Intelligence can see it, if you want to say it simple. You can take an observer position, and then you can monitor yourself. This is taught in a whole branch of psychology which is called logotherapy, but it is actually also the essence of spiritual psychology, to take on a distance position, the observer position. As I said in the previous session, there was one psychologist called Viktor Frankl who was captured by the Nazis, you know, Hitler's henchmen, and thrown into a concentration camp where he was subject to the most inhuman treatment. It is really too much, you know, what they did with him. They drove nails under his nails, they put electricity at sensitive spots in his body, told him he should live in a dog's hut and bark like a dog. He was chained and so on. He watched many of his other people who were breaking down under this treatment, and who were carried out dead from the barracks in which they slept. But he developed and a certain technique which is very akin to what I will teach you from the spiritual perspective in a moment, to gain control over his mind and his emotions. He said later, there was the Nazis took everything away from me, but they couldn't take what he called the last human freedom. And what that is, the last human freedom, is the ability to choose your response, and to choose and monitor your emotions. The way he expresses it, these are his words, between the stimuli and the reaction is a space. And it is in this space where our entire human freedom lies. In other words, you can choose here how to react. The way what he did is, I don't think this will work for everyone. He was interested in psychology, and he decided to turn the tables. The Nazis became his study object. He wanted to find out what went on in them to do what they did to him and to other prisoners. And he developed a lot of his psychology and his findings on this time where the Nazis were in his laboratory. I think that is a very strong person who can do this internally. But what I will teach you is a concept called the emotional traffic light, which is very, very easy for you to apply in daily life. The emotional traffic light derives from a certain understanding of the human mind, which is based on ancient wisdom teachings. And that is that I have a body which I can use almost like I use a car or an ox cart in old times. I can drive with it. It can bring me to wherever I want it to bring me. And while the body and the additional instrument, the mind, are active, I am more like a passenger inside. And I can see, while I act and while I speak, that it is my body and my mind who is acting and speaking. To make it very easy, I could go at any time into the neutral observer position where I can look at me talking, addressing you as an audience, thinking how I will reach you, how I will bring my subject with which words, and I can then monitor my behavior and give myself a few good tips. Or I would, for instance, say, Satchidananda Swami, I notice you have a cold. Yes. Oh, Satchidananda Swami, I notice you are slightly uncertain if your English-speaking audience understands your English. I have seen some emotion in me, a feeling of a little uncertainty, if not insecurity. So these are the two informations which I have gotten while I slipped out of the situation and observed myself. I'm coming back. While I was in this position, I said, for your cold, we can do something simple. We just, after this session, you can just take some warm ginger tea. It will drive it out. Don't worry, we will get this over with. The body will be healthy very soon, 5 minutes. No, it takes a little longer. And as in terms of your I'm exaggerating, it's not really insecurity. I'm giving an example. I know that you understand me, but I can see this in your eyes. But let us say this would have been the case. I would say, well, you can only do as good as you can. Give your best, and these are wonderful people. They understand that you endeavor. They will make a special effort to hear. I'm giving an example. So the observer position helps me to monitor my emotions, my mind, and everything. And I would like to teach you this observer position. You will find this also in your notebook for later usage. I have called what I did in modern language the emotional traffic light. It came from an experience I had in Serbia during the war in ex-Yugoslavia. I was often in Serbia, and I had been really in very difficult situations. Just to give you a little example, I had been once in Split. Split means the southern part of Croatia. And I had given a lecture on non-violence, ahimsa. So after I had finished, my host had arranged a signing, an hour where I would sign books. And I saw a queue of people coming to me with books which I was supposed to sign. So amongst them was a person dressed in the dress of a soldier, you know, this green, yellow dress, black dress. And I could see he was he was very disturbed. So he came closer. And the way he looked was, he looked very aggressive. Very aggressive. Then, when it was his turn, he said, "You have no idea about what you talk." Next to me, my best friend was shot. I saw how a Serbian bullet took out his brain. It splattered all over me. I saw death in his eyes, and he dropped into my lap. How can I be non-violent in such a circumstance? We have war here, Mr. Monk. What would you do if I would now take my fist and give you a solid beating into your face? And he looked as if he was going to do it. I said, "Well, Sachinandan Swami, what now?" This happens in split seconds. And he, then I said, and I thought for a moment. First I thought, how do I get out of this? Then the second is, no. Let me connect with myself now. And then I had it. I said, "You know, I would certainly not like if you hit me. It will be painful. But I would sincerely try to understand you and why you are so disturbed that you want to take it out on me." And like this. He looked at me, he had not calculated that I would give this answer, and he just said something under his breath, it might have been a swear word, and he went. Then I continued, when everything was finished and the hall was closed, I went through the stage entry and over the tarmac to where the car was parked. Then I saw a shadow coming out behind the door. It was my soldier. I was now totally unprotected. There was only my driver with me, but no one else. And he came, he darted towards me, and I said, "Now I'm really going to get it. I don't know, I have some experience, but with this person, better I don't try to defend myself and just protect myself." Then he came to me just really close and he said, "Thank you," with tears welling in his eyes, and then he disappeared in the darkness. Afterwards, I had time to think about it. What had I done that touched this person? What had I done to myself? I had stepped back. I had stopped. I had not given an impulsive reaction like a proper German would do. If you beat me, I beat you back. Not like this. I had gone back. I had stopped, first observed the situation, and then thought what would be an appropriate answer, a truthful answer, but an appropriate answer. So the emotional traffic light is doing this. Something happens to you and you switch on red. You don't react immediately. Our world would be a different one if people would have known that they have a red button. Stop. Now don't say anything impulsive. Then you go onto the yellow modus. That is, you think, you wait. Give it some time and think what is the most appropriate reaction in this situation. Maybe use some empathy. Empathy is not just understanding a person's feelings, it's like feeling it. Like it was like in the Red Indians, they say, "If you want to understand me, walk one day in my moccasins. Meet the same people. Go to the river to fetch the water." And so on. Empathy means when you see a beggar, not just thinking the poor thing, the poor beggar, you think, how does he feel? He must be freezing now. Maybe an appropriate gift would be a hot cup of tea. Empathy means you start to also not understand, but you feel what they feel and come from this place. That helps a lot in relationships, by the way. Mm. And then after you have spent some time in the waiting mood, not waiting and thinking mood or reflecting mood, then only you go to the green. My dear people, many wars could have been avoided by the emotional traffic light. Many wars at home could have been avoided. Many marriages would still be together then if people would have seen this as the quarrel and the misunderstanding as a chance to grow beyond themselves and so on. And the emotions would be so different. Because the moment you put the torchlight of your conscious reflection onto what is going on within yourself, many things just dissolve. In this yellow mode, this red mode, this yellow mode, Do we say in English also yellow, or do we say, is it a different word? Ah, a response from my crowd. By the way, I know that word. Mm. Kept it for getting a reaction. Mm. So that ember mode, that is very, very useful for life. It is very useful for getting the emotions clear. Because when you use it, you are no longer identified with what is going on. You're no longer one with this, what is going on. You are separating yourself from it. And you and your consciousness, your clear consciousness, which you have cultivated in your roots, will take care of monitoring your emotions in the right way. Mm. I found out most of the problems people have is because they give in to these impulses like anger, enviousness, illusion. That is like in our example, this man was in illusion. He thought the country, a man who lived in the country would be unfriendly and never be interested to help him by lending him his jack. All these enemies which have which feast on us will not have a scope to even continue their activities if you learn this emotional traffic light. I'm putting it in modern language. In ancient language, I would say we become the upadrashta, the neutral witness, which is possible when you take a spiritual position. Good. I would like to now. I will only give you one of the exercises. I would like to take you to a practical exercise. Do you have at the moment something, or could you find something which concerns you, which evokes an emotional response in you? Maybe a relationship, maybe a situation in your life, maybe a health issue which you have, something which evokes an emotional response. Yes? Maybe you have fallen in love. We look at something which is strong. Usually the easiest would be if I would do now something unexpected and then evoke a certain reaction, but I don't have an idea what to do in this situation, nor do I think it is appropriate. If I can't help you, you have to help yourself to find something. I have also something. I would request you to relax a little bit, take a few deep breaths, because we will do some inner work now. Focus now, please, kindly on the situation which concerns you. Just see it before you. And go on the first modus of your emotional traffic light. Do not give in to your usual reactions, but just acknowledge that yes, here is something which concerns me. if you feel you have not yet found something which is of an emotional strong nature, maybe you want to switch it. I just switched it, my thing, found something else. How do you react to the situation or to this person? Just observe a sense of anxiety. Some insecurity. What could be something positive, great enthusiasm. Your consciousness is a little bit like a pond in a forest, and the impressions which come are like animals which go there to drink. A conscious person allows these impressions to rise and observes them, much like a photographer of nature observes whoever it is that shows up at a pond where one can drink. We are already in this mode, but maybe not consciously. Go to the ember and take an observer role. Make some distance. Review. Reassess. Is it really the way you see it or perceive it? What is going on in the people who are in some way connected with the situation? Will it really be the way you anticipate it will be in the future? And last but not least, what could be a better reaction to the situation? For the people, for the circumstance, than the one which you often take, or which you have taken in the past? What could help the situation or the relationships to become different? Finally, after hopefully something useful has turned up, you can switch on green. This you can't do now, but when you are in the situation or when you meet the people who appeared in this exercise in your mind, and you can act in a different way, in the new way. Try it, and there will for sure be a change in the situation and in the relationship, 100%, because you won't do the same thing, you won't say the same thing, something will change. This can be done as often as need be, and it will come after some time. It will become a normal thing for you to do, something which you do as natural as you walk, something which people will notice as an emotional maturity in you. Making a distance and taking on an observer position, going, so to say, in the amber mode, the yellow mode of the emotional traffic light, is a way, and I really do not know any better way, and it is verblüffend einfach, we say in German language. It's so strikingly simple, but it is it has a volcanic effect on your life when you learn this simple thing. And I found this also in, there was a revolution in which many teachers took note of. It was a book called Emotional Intelligence, and I know the author quite well. In our two meetings we became very close. Friendships for me take some time to grow, but it could become a friendship through thick and thin if we would have more time, because he told me from the viewpoint of psychology what I know from the viewpoint of spiritual practice, that there have been tests made on children and I hope I remember it. You know, there's children were given, were promised something, and then a cake. There was something with cake or sweet dish, and then they were said, they were told, "Well, if you could just wait before you have this one sweet dish, you will get two sweet dishes." Really, sounds like something you would do with mice and red. I'm not so comfortable with this, with these type of studies. And it was found out that the children who learned to wait a little bit and not immediately showed their intense desire to have the sweet dish became maturer in their when they were grown up. There was a significant research. I'm sorry that I can't repeat it to you in a very, let me say, it's really long back where he told me this. The children, what you learn when you learn to wait and don't react immediately and give in immediately is to widen the gap where your freedom lies, that space within which is so precious. And I would request you to consider this both in your private life, in your personal life, as well as in your professional life, that you can somehow bring the children to an emotional security or maturity. Maturity will bring that security. Fine. This is all what I want to present on emotional well-being. There are many other things which one could do. Meditation, prayer is very works very well. I'm saying this if you are from a faith context, the prayer is well developed. My grandmother was, I could say, the best Christian. I say it as a grandchild. There are obviously other Christians who are, you can't place a value judgment when it comes on religious matters and so on. She was, when she was days before her death, she invited me to say goodbye to her. And because I loved her dearly and she loved me dearly, I felt free to ask a very difficult question. I said, how does it feel when one is in this situation? You have been found thrice lying unconscious in your apartment, and you know what that means. The doctor has given you informations. I've heard it from my father, your son. How does it feel? And she said, I was so afraid at the beginning of death. I was so afraid. Oh, it would haunt me. I would not be able to do anything. But then I took shelter in prayer. And now I can honestly say, when I live, I'm in the right hand of God. And when I die, I'm in the left hand of God. Where's the difference? I could see this person had conquered her fears and anxieties, which are, I think, very understandable emotions, by referring to a higher point of reference, God. There are many, many things which the spiritual schools can offer us to get control, or control sounds so, I would say to monitor our emotions. But I really want to be very practical. Please take this emotional traffic light with you. It's very simple. Everyone can remember it, because every time you are before a traffic light in your car or in the bus with which you go to work, you can remember, Hacha, I heard this. Red, what was it? Red, amber, and green. Okay, what was it referring to? Distance yourself, contemplate from a distant, from a position of distance, emotional distance. What would be, is this true? Use empathy when it is in relationship to others. And then decide for a good course of thinking, understanding, and acting ultimately. While I was talking, I did something in relationship to my own fear of death. I have seen too many deaths in my life, and I have suffered because I did not make up with people. Make up is, I don't know if this is the right word, which I had not connected with them, and this caused me some grief, very great grief. And also I have been in a few times in hospitals, and I have been in Asia. I have looked into the eyes of wild tigers who were furious at me. I have looked into the eyes of malaria and jaundice. Boo. I have been many times at the border, and I have an ambivalent feeling sometimes I'm a little really afraid and have many emotions, and other times I see, well, I'm an eternal soul. There is no death for the soul. There's only death for the body. But it's not always possible for me to be on that level, especially when something happens or when I fall asleep in a car, then the car has a problem, you know, gets out of control, and I wake up with visions of my death. Hare Krishna. And I did it with this emotion while I was talking, and it was helpful for me, at least. And I hope it was helpful for you and is helpful for you. As I said, this technique I have detailed in some detail in your book, which is a gift to all of you. Please use it for your own benefit, and then you can maybe see how to translate all this into the language of an educator. We will hear about such things, I think, in the evening, no, at the afternoon session, by a very talented, pedagogically astute person who will give us a session from 2:30 onwards. I think it's from the brief discussion we had, I gleaned that it will be about how to teach something that is the art of pedagogic knowledge. Good. I have come to the end here. Would you like to ask a question? This would be a time for a question and answer session. Not all at once, please. I want to tell you how I come to this place inside of me where I want to know more. In other words, to the place where I want to ask the question. I reflect about the subject which I have heard, and then see, okay, now how can I use this in my life, if it's a subject which is not for me to use? I will ask, well, how does the subject look in the context of something else which I have heard before about it? And immediately when I look at the subject from these perspectives, I develop questions where I am curious to know more about what is there. Sometimes I even, when nothing comes, I turn all my attention to the person who has given a lecture, and I'm thinking, oh, I'm curious to know this about the person, or that, if it is appropriate to be asked in public, I ask him. In other words, well, different perspectives to what I've heard allow me to reflect about something and then want to know more. So maybe that helps, I don't know. Yes, your good name, please.
My name is Yogesh.
Yogesh, you are saving us.
Actually, you spoke about this emotional traffic light, and of course red is the stop signal. Not to go too much into it, sometimes, you know, there are situations very tense, and most of the time you go into the red. Is there any tip or anything you would like to suggest us that we do in a daily practice or on a daily basis, that we don't go too much into that emotional level? We are kind of away from that.
When life throws a difficult situation in our lap. Oops. Now we have to now we are impulse driven to react here. Yeah. How to do? We are shocked maybe by what has happened, or we are irritated, or we are. See, the very first thing, if you want to monitor your emotions and strengthen those good emotions and not nourish those emotions which are not good, is to recognize them. Mm. I had a very good friend who left his body, His Holiness Bhakti Tirtha Maharaj, a wonderful, wonderful spiritualist. Ooh, very close also to me. And before he left, we had one last meeting, and he asked me a question. He said, "In your heart are two dogs fighting. Which one will win?" He was referring to the various emotions, no? The various sides. I said to him, I don't know. But think harder. And I always say the wrong thing when I'm asking such questions, so I became shy and blocked, and I said, "I really don't know, you tell the answer." He said, "That side in you will win, of that dog in you will win, which you nourish, give food, give strength." So there are emotions in us which we have to feed, which we have to nourish. Maybe we are distrustful. We have a few bad experiences. So we need to nourish our trusting side, and so on and so forth. That's very important. But before you can give the side food, you need to recognize this. It's almost like if you go out and there are a few dogs which you want to nourish. You must see, this is the black dog, this is the gray dog, this is the green dog, not, but you know, and you must recognize them. So, as I said, our consciousness is like a pond, and so much comes, so many emotions come. Like the animals in the desert who come and drink, or in the forest who come and drink, and you must recognize them to keep them apart. A little awareness. And this is emotional maturity. We must learn this, and then it is, then we nourish the right things. Happiness is the best doctor for all emotions, and contentment that comes from being in contact with oneself. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Thank you very much for saying that. Right, sometimes I feel that by nature I'm not a very fiery person.
Not a very,
fiery
person.
Mm-hmm. So that the red light really, I don't struggle with it so much. So I feel that I don't have enough urgency sometimes. So that I'm kind of like white light, or
you're always aloof.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So how would I have that urgency that I would actually do something in terms of even that applies in my spiritual life? Like that.
Yeah. You have to ask yourself, what is it inside of you which keeps you from giving you 100%? If you find it, you will. If you find an answer to this, it will affect various areas of your life, because if we are in one area too aloof, you know, we don't care, you know. we are aloof in other areas as well. It carries into other areas. Something for emotional well-being is you need to find your glowing yes. Something you identify with. Something which you can see as your own. And then when you find it, in one of the previous retreats which I gave here in England, it was about Dharma, finding your purpose in life. If you find it, this purpose or this glowing yes, I say in normal English, will release powers in you, which are amazing. The moment a person finds his glowing yes, something he is really enthusiastic for, he becomes so emotionally vibrant and alive. That's very good. The thing is that he remains emotionally mature. It doesn't snap into becoming overzealous. Is it called overly zealous and tries to convert the whole world to his glowing yes? okay, that is a malfunction. It is not desired if you do like that. But finding your purpose, it's so strong. And I want to say now something for you who are very respected by me, because I always thought if I had not become like this, I would have become a teacher. Because as a teacher, you can really, you're at a place where you can really help the world by helping the constituents of the world, the elements, the children, the young minds, to grow and come out. It's the greatest job is not the profession, or calling is better. But you have answered to this calling, and if you can find a wonderful relationship to this, where you have a glowing, discover your enthusiasm, you will almost have a second lease on life. It is so, so wonderful. It's such an opportunity. And I think in the Avanti school, this is why I appreciate the efforts of all you pioneers so much, is I'm saying pioneers because it's something new. It's bringing spirituality alive in the educational context. You are pioneers in this, and many things need to be still found out. You need to, I don't think we have yet all the answers, but we are getting there. Now find your glowing yes in this, and that will also be emotional tonic. It will enliven your other emotions as well. It will separate, and it will help you to not be aloof. I have an older brother who is very much aloof of everything, and he tells me, behind my pleasant smile, which I show the world, there is someone who has not found his life as of yet. And Krishna, it will come, it will come. He's on a good track now, he is. Good. Fine. Then I think we have come to a good conclusion here. I want to invite our talented person who seems to want to get us into the cold river. No.